It's time for the Contempo Coding Podcast. Discussions, knowledge, and insight to help you succeed in the medical coding industry. And now, here's your host, Victoria.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the channel. I am here today with Pam Vanderbilt. Pam is the owner of Knowledge Tree Billing, which is a full-service medical billing company, and it provides compliant revenue cycle consulting services and provider-owned practice education and services as well. So I knew Pam originally because she did a lot of writing for NAMIS. And then I saw her come to the Harrisburg chapter, and I was speaking at the same chapter event at the same time. And I'm like, oh, Pam, she's from NAMIS. She's so smart because she does all that stuff for NAMIS. And Pam became a fan of the channel and had no idea that I actually thought she was amazing because I knew her as like this wonderful expert in E&M. And I was like, ooh, Pam, we spoke at the same. So thank you, Pam, for coming on the channel.
Thank you so much for having me. And I was definitely fangirling by the view.
So with so many years of experience in auditing and revenue cycle analysis, what are some of the big changes you've seen over the years, some of the most significant ones in medical billing and coding?
I think there are a couple different directions that I could answer that question, actually. I do feel like in days gone by, you didn't necessarily need to be trained as a coder to work
well,
in the billing department, right?
You should have been.
Ideally,
but
yes.
You weren't.
but the rules have become so much more complex. The regulations are complex.
Yes.
And as we saw through COVID, they change and change rapidly.
Yeah.
And so I think that really is one of those. We have to be at the top of our game. We have to stay current in understanding what's happening as it relates to our specialty, but not just our specialty, our industry, so that we make sure that we've got compliant documentation, mm-hmm. we've got information going out on a clean claim, and we know how to play the game on the back end. If we get a denial, you know, how to appropriately handle those denials. Is it a valid denial or not?
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's been a lot of change and we have to stay really current.
And I think one of the things that we'll see more is, you know, we have all this automation that's up and coming.
Yeah.
And it's been easy in the past to pull up one chart and look at it and go, yep, that's right. That's the codes. But when you're auditing the same provider and looking at notes and looking at a lot of repeat notes, that's when you start catching those sort of things.
Absolutely.
This provider's used the same macro for every single patient. This provider's used the same template for every single patient. This provider has copy forwarded the same note for this patient for the past 10 years.
Or even better, the same note for this patient and every other patient they've ever seen for the last 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's until you really take some of those deep dives and look at these things when they can go undetected for like so long.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, the practice wants to kick back and be like, oh, well, we've never had this problem before. We don't understand.
That's right. Well, and just because you haven't been audited yet,
right,
it just means you don't know that you were audited.
Right. Right.
Because I guarantee you in some way, shape or form you have, if you're getting those requests to send records prepayment, you are being audited.
You're being audited. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you have a lot of different credentials in the field to the point that I think some of them you're just doing for fun at this point, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I am. Yes.
So have these different areas of expertise, auditing, compliance. Do you have the practice management one yet? You did. So how have all of those different areas and getting that expertise in those areas, how has it influenced your career?
I firmly believe that it really kind of has shaped my understanding that we don't live in silos.
Yeah.
I think there are probably people out there that are coders and will always only be coders.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, if we understand how the business of healthcare happens, we have to understand how each piece works together in the puzzle.
Yeah.
To what degree we need to understand that varies based on what we're doing.
Right? I know this much of credentialing and provider enrollment, and that's all I've ever needed to know. Yep. But I know that much of credentialing and provider enrollment.
I'm with you on that. And what I do know is if it's not done right, we're in big fat trouble.
Yeah.
And I can refer you to the right person to get it done right.
Right.
Because that's the other thing. I may have all these credentials, but I don't have to remember everything by myself. I have Victoria, if I have a question about, you know, skin intake and plastics and all the reconstruction, I've got, you know, other people for other specialties. So I don't have to remember all the details. I have to know where to go for the resource if I need help.
Right, right. And I think that's one of the fun things that I love the most about coding is it's not about memorizing all of the answers. It's about knowing where to go and find them.
Absolutely.
You don't have to know. I don't know all the guidelines to sepsis off the top of my head. I could not recite them. I could not tell, but I know where to find them.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm looking at a chart and I'm like, oh, patient septic, I know there's some kind of guideline on this. Let me refresh my memory of what that is. I know where it is in the guidelines.
Absolutely. And that's one of the first things that I think I really learned as I was starting down a path into this side of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for someone who, if I had a question, she'd go start looking stuff up. And I'm, what are you looking up?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, the answer's actually right here. Oh, well, I could have done that. Why didn't you just tell me to go look it up here? You know, and so as we help each other learn how to fish,
mm-hmm.
you know, we start learning, oh my gosh, all this information is out there
somewhere
for us.
Yeah.
We just have to know how to go find it. So.
And what is the right resource for it?
Oh my gosh,
because
yes.
I can't tell you how many people I've encountered that are like, well, I found this on the AAPC forum where Betty Sue posted 5 years ago that this is how she's always billed for this gynecological service. And I'm like, well, that might have been great 5 years ago in her region, but what does our region do right now?
Right now, yes. Well, and the other thing is you have to be careful because they sound like they know exactly what they're talking about.
Yeah.
But they're actually giving very bad advice. So if you're on a forum, regardless of what forum it is, and they don't cite authoritative references mm-hmm. that you can go and follow and do your own research, don't take their word for it. Y'all don't take my word for anything. Go do your own research. I'm giving you the information that is current and to the best of my knowledge at the time, but it may not be right for your circumstance.
Right, right. So you teach about documenting to the level that demonstrates the complexity of the work that the provider actually performed. Can you share some tips on how providers can achieve that?
I always go back to telling the story. And you know, we've had these fabulous changes in E&M. I am a huge supporter of the 2021 and updates to 23 guidelines because I feel like if the providers understand truly what those changes are, that it's making their life easier. And so I teach them, tell a story. Your chief complaint is the title of your story. Your history is your introduction to the visit.
Yeah.
How's the patient doing? And then you've got your medically appropriate exam and any objective findings. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to your assessment and plan, that's when you really tell me as the auditor, as the coder, as the insurance payer, or as the patient, exactly what you know about taking care of the health of a patient.
Right.
Don't just dump a diagnosis code in and refill medications.
Right.
How's the patient doing? Do we need to order more labs for this problem? What do we need to do? Wrap it up and give us a good conclusion.
Yeah.
And make it a really good one. And if it sounds like maybe I'm suggesting the SOAP notes kind of did that well and what we've done in EMR doesn't necessarily pick it up as well, I am saying that. But we have to use the tools that we have also. So make the best of the resources and the style of documenting that you have, but tell us a story.
Yeah. And I feel like sometimes we see two different extremes of that. We just pulled in the problem list, continue as you've been, you know. And then we see these providers that pull in everything from every nook and cranny of the medical record, where it's the diseases that they've had, anything for the past 10 years. And sometimes they just add on to whatever was last time. And it's like, oh, I just need to know today what happened today.
All right, Christine Hall. Well, and that is true. And I think also I have quite a few clients who are primary care. And so annually, they're trying to capture their HCC and get that HCC risk out. And so, you know, from a pro fee side of things, we teach you don't put a diagnosis on unless you're actually doing something. Is it a problem being addressed today? But there are purposes from a data perspective that they are trying to capture those diagnoses. Well, then capture your HCC diagnoses, not your signs and symptoms from something that's in the active problem list, but actually is a resolved issue from 20 years ago.
Right, right. You know? You're not treating their UTI from 2 years ago during their annual wellness visit.
So I think one of the things that I try and teach providers, because I found that I'll look at a note sometimes and I'll be on the fence. I kind of think maybe this is a four, but what I'm seeing isn't getting me there. Mm-hmm. And so if I sit down with a provider and say, tell me what happened in the room with the patient this day, and they tell me the story, and I'm like, oh my God, it's a five. You missed it. You know, let's make sure that we get what you just told me into the next encounter that's like this. Mm-hmm. And they're like, but it's just so hard with the EMR, and I have to point and click. Stop point and clicking. Stop copy paste. Stop carry forward. Hit your little microphone button and do voice to text and dictate your notes, because you just told me a story that I can't see in your point and click, carry forward, copy, paste, and macros.
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't need to be, I mean, it's nice for us if it's in this nice little bulleted compact list, but it doesn't have to be if it's easier for the provider.
Exactly.
And provider burnout is just, it's getting so bad.
It's an issue.
It is like to the point that I even said to some of my friends, I'm like, I'm at the point where I almost want to get concierge care because I can't get into my primary care physician for almost nothing. So, yeah. How can the physicians with their documentation and the auditors that are reviewing the services, how can they collaborate to make sure that the documentation is kind of supporting that level of medical necessity without causing that extra burden on the physician?
I find sometimes when I'm talking to others in the industry that we have this very defined idea. This is what the guidelines say, and you have to put this here.
Yeah.
Knock it off.
Yeah.
We should never have taught them you have to have 14 systems in the review of systems. If it wasn't relevant, don't do it, right? We've got to stop being so black and white in what we're telling them and give them the concept and then allow them to run with it. And it is a collaboration. So then go back after they've run with it for a little bit and go, okay, just a slight tweak. Mm-hmm. I don't need 10 paragraphs, but could you just give me a little tweak that better defines and shows the complexity? Because remember, I'm not clinical. Mm-hmm. And likelihood is the reviewer at the carrier is also non-clinical. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, neither is your patient. And at the end of the day, the notes contained within the record belong to the patient.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big difference between, okay, what is minimally acceptable? What's the very least that you have to do?
Yes.
And what is our pie in the sky hope and dream of what we would love to see in your documentation? We have to find sort of the balance somewhere in between there.
Well, and I even before the changes in the guidelines, I'd be looking at providers sometimes, and I'm not to call out any particular EMR, but there are some EMRs that are used on the facility side more predominantly that you will get a level one follow-up hospital visit that is 25 pages long because every stinking laboratory result and radiology result and everything else is in the note. And I'm having to dig through all of that. Knock it off. Quit putting stuff in your note that's not relevant to the note.
Right.
And if you put it in, tell me why it's there.
Yeah.
Explain the relevance. And if you got that part down, you're going to make your life easier. You're going to make my life easier. And we're going to support the services and the payment for the services instead of ending up having to defend for that payment.
Yeah. Volume doesn't always necessarily mean the higher level of service.
Volume means I'm probably going to downcode you because I can't figure out what you really did.
Yeah, exactly. So networking has been a big part of your career. And like you talked about having those other resources that you can reach out to, having people in your network. Do you have any tips for networking for coders that are remote and maybe they don't have budgets for like the big in-person events?
I think there are a lot of opportunities. Clearly, we learned through COVID, if we weren't already working in remote environments, that we can connect remotely. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like I'm connecting with you, not in the same way each time I watch one of your videos, mm-hmm. right? But on the flip side of that, we can Zoom, we can FaceTime, whatever we want, and we're still having that face-to-face connection, real-time audio video, right?
Right.
But I do think that it's important, whether you're certified or not, be active in your local chapter. It's fabulous education. It's great opportunity. A lot of the meetings are still virtual, so maybe you're not face-to-face, but I know the chapters are making the effort mm-hmm. to at least create a couple of opportunities a year for everybody to come together. Take advantage of it. Make it a priority. Schedule the day off of work if you have to. Make it a priority because you've got to continue to build your network. From the conference perspective, I highly recommend conferences. I think AAPC does a great conference. NamUs is my favorite conference in the whole wide world. There's others. If you're in the billing arena, you've got AMBA out there. They do really good conferences, but they are admittedly expensive. You know, we are not staying at Motel 8 this week, right?
Right.
So
I was so jealous. There was some kind of healthcare compliance organization that had been slightly on my radar, but I hadn't really been too intimately involved in. And all of a sudden, my LinkedIn is flooded with these pictures of these people out at this conference in Anaheim. And I'm like,
what?
I could have gone out to a healthcare compliance seminar, conference, met all of my friends, and gone to Disneyland.
Absolutely. Yeah. there are, you know, other, not everybody is cheeky boutique-y when it comes to their conferences. And so, for example, Advanced Coding Services has these fabulous retreats that they bring around the country. The goal is to have four a year, San Diego, Prescott, one that's in South Georgia, and New York.
So there's somewhere that's drivable for a lot of people.
And they're meant to be more intimate. You would never expect 300 people there because then it loses the retreatness.
Right.
And it's literally, you know, you as the attendee and me as a speaker and Christine Hall as both, you know, it's all of us there together and we're all on the same level sharing and communicating. And Beth got on to me, well, didn't get on to me, but pointed out that I never got out of my flip-flops the whole time we were in San Diego because it's just, be comfortable. You don't have to get all dressed up and frou-frou. We're there to learn and network. And if you can't afford to be at every conference, and if money is an issue, plan ahead, invest in yourself, pick one. You know, if your interest is really auditing and compliance, save up and go to the NamUs conference. If you want a more across the board with a heavy focus on coding, go to an AAPC conference. If you want that more relaxed environment, more intimate, and we're going to learn anything about practicing the business of medicine, mm-hmm. then find a retreat. But save the money up, invest in yourself. Don't rely on your employer to invest in your education.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of people get tripped up. They're like, oh, I want to do this, but my employer won't pay for it. Well, you know, if you're looking to evolve, if you're looking to grow in your career, sometimes you have to make those sacrifices. And it is a lot to go to a conference. But when you have something that's drivable, like a regional conference or like a seminar, it makes it a little bit easier.
Absolutely.
And in absence of that, there's a lot of great virtual trainings that you can do as well. I'm excited to see the continued progress of Natasha Timberlake, how she's been out watching everything. And now she's starting to speak. And I'm like, Natasha, I'm waiting to see you at HealthCon as a speaker is what I'm
waiting for.
Absolutely. And because that's going to be the next step.
Lady Martinez.
Yes.
She's speaking for our chapter coming up and it will be her first live presentation. And what I'm excited to see for her is not just her presenting at an AAPC conference, but doing it bilingually. Because there is a definite dearth of education on the coding and auditing front because we don't have enough bilinguals in this country that are educating.
And hot tip, if you speak at a conference, most of the time they let you in the conference for free.
Yeah.
So that's a money-saving tip. So how do you see the field of medical coding evolving in the future, especially with some of the intimidating new technology that we have going on?
It scares me a little bit. I'm going to be really honest about it. Not scared that I'm going to lose my job, that all of a sudden, all of us are going to lose our jobs because a robot's going to come in and take over.
Mm-hmm.
But more concerned that even as evolved as the technology has gotten, there is a uniqueness to the care of the health of patients that is very different than any other industry out there. And I think that there are nuances that the AI is never going to be able to pick up. We could never train it.
I always used to laugh when I worked in these large organizations and they'd bring in all of these lean management people.
Yes.
And I would always hear from them, we always thought we had this down because manufacturing was so easy and all these other industries were just so good to go in and implement all of these lean management tactics. And then we tackled healthcare and the usual procedures were just not working.
Like
they just don't.
Well, and yes, it is a business. And yes, ultimately, you would like at least enough money coming in to keep the lights on for the business and keep a roof over your head and food in the mouth and bellies of your family, right? But at the end of the day, it is not like any other business.
But it's fascinating, too, to see things like Google and Amazon start getting into healthcare. And I think it's Amazon has, I don't know if it's kind of like a limited telehealth sort of service that they have now, where you can go in and like scan your insurance card and set up like a virtual, I don't know if it's a virtual video visit or just like a, I have a UTI and can you give me a prescription and here's what I'm doing and someone reviews it and they spit out what you need. But it's just, it's so weird to like think about healthcare in the same spectrum of where I go to order office supplies,
exactly,
carpets.
Yes. And it'll be interesting to see how those develop and progress. I think the other thing, though, that we have to keep in mind is who's providing those services. And of course, let me just play devil's advocate for a second.
Is it robots?
Yes. And playing devil's advocate for a second, there's so much opportunity for healthcare fraud out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is this legit or is this a compliance risk? And are we becoming a victim of the compliance risk?
Right. You know? That was one of the questions that came up to me. I'm like, so what would be preventing someone from just, let's say even me as example, I take my insurance card. I say I'm so-and-so, but I give my friend symptoms because she doesn't have insurance so I can get her a prescription. Right. And I'm not really the person that I say I am. Like what is the barrier there that's stopping me from doing that?
Right, exactly. So, and I think there's so many opportunities, kind of like these companies that reach out to these unsuspecting providers that are usually single provider practices that are not super up to date on the industry, compliance industry. They're like, hey, can you just do these little televisits with these patients and give them a script for their DME or give them a script for their insulin? And then the provider goes down in the middle of a healthcare sting.
Yeah.
I'm totally unaware that they were doing something like that, you know? So, it's concerning.
Keeping us on our toes.
They do.
Always something new to learn and watch out for.
And I don't think that all technology is bad, though.
No.
I think there are it should be a tool, though. It should not be the end-all be-all.
Yeah. I think some providers I've seen, especially some of the new residents, they're very adept at it. And like I've seen some of the residents where they're like, well, I have macros, but I have like very customized ones and I have a blank space so that here's my one for my patients that have a diabetic complication. And then when I see my diabetes patients, I put in this macro and I fill in this part and this part. Oh, okay. Well, since it's customized for the condition and not just everyone's getting the same thing, like I can see that. And you're very good at that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and if you think about it, way back in the day, way back, before we ever even considered electronic medical records, when we had transcriptionists, they used macros.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the doctor would dictate normal exam, except.
Yeah.
And they would give the exceptions. And so the transcriptionist would bring in that normal template and then make the appropriate changes.
Yeah, which was, I've actually shadowed in on providers where I watched them rounding on the inpatient floor, saw what they asked the patient, saw what they examined, watched them go out to the floor, pick up their dictation phone, and then use their full normal exam template and full review systems. And I'm like, I was just in the room there with you. And I know
you didn't do that. You did not do that. That's like I asked if my previous life when I was in the ortho world, asked my providers, I'm like, I noticed you do this GI exam on a majority of your patients. Mm-hmm. And I am not clinical. So help me understand how that GI exam corresponds with what you're doing for their left toe complaint today. Mm-hmm. And uniformly across the board, I would get, well, it doesn't. It's just part of the template. And I'm like, did you do the exam? No. And I said, okay, did you sign the note? Yes, that's fraud. Oh. I'm like, y'all only document what you did. But I did have my hip specialist appropriately was doing a GI exam and explained to me clinically how it was relevant to what she was doing.
Okay.
Because there are areas in the abdomen, hip, and pelvis, you know, that kind of your pain can be referred. And is it musculoskeletal or is it GI was an appropriate concern.
Okay.
But I was like, okay, I can follow that. I'm on board.
I like when they put in their templates that the rectal exam was deferred. And it's like, well, if I was coming in for an ear exam, I would also defer a rectal examination be done on me.
Exactly.
Like maybe we should take that out of the template.
But Victoria, are you sure?
Yeah, I'm quite sure. So what's next for you in your career and with Knowledge Tree Billing? Do you have any kind of goals or plans that you're excited about?
I am super excited that we have seen growth from the billing company perspective, but we kind of stay in our niche. I like that smaller practice because those are typically the practices that don't have the wherewithal to have a certified coder. Right. They don't have somebody in there with strong compliance knowledge. And so we're not your typical billing company. We don't just claims out, post the payments. Maybe we write it off or maybe we appeal it. We are looking at the entire revenue cycle and identifying where there are issues. Do we not understand what an insurance card means when we look at who the insurance is? You know, how do we train the front desk? How do we need to go in and kind of do a little bit of focus training with the providers and kind of help get them moving along? Do they need a compliance plan? Do I need to contact Sean Weiss and say, Sean, I need to come in and do a gap analysis? So it's kind of, we aren't their billing company. Mm-hmm. We are their billing department.
Okay.
And so they have that resource like a larger organization would have. Mm-hmm. But I can't just do that. Mm-hmm. I love teaching. Mm-hmm. I love the research that goes behind it and understanding the whys. And so my goal is to move the company along in a direction that I'm not necessarily in the day-to-day billing part of it as much as I'm creating opportunities for affordable education for people all across the country. And so that is my ultimate goal.
So for healthcare providers, for coders, for billers, or just all of those people?
All of them.
I love that. That's cool. So like in person or online education, both?
Both. But online, I'm not a huge fan myself of on-demand education. Mm-hmm. I like the interaction. I think that as the learner, you get more out of it.
Yeah.
Partially, it's just my own personality. Mm-hmm. As a trainer, as an educator, I like that interaction as well, you know. So I see that most of what I would do is, or what I do even now is live, but I will do it online or in person.
I agree. Well, thank you so much, Pam, for connecting with me today and for agreeing to come on the channel and be part of the video podcast. Where can my viewers find you? Is there somewhere they should connect with you and your business?
Absolutely, on LinkedIn.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Pam. I appreciate
it. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been fun.